Welcome to the Dragons, Gazelles, and Unicorns podcast. I'm Rosemary Freeman, founder and CEO of the Center for Advanced Innovation. I'm also founder and CEO of Ignite Social Impact. And I'm here to welcome one of my favorite people on the planet, Gil Price. He's been a good friend, a colleague, a corporate executive, a serial entrepreneur, and I'm just really thrilled to have him share his valuable insights with you today. So thank you, Gil, so much for coming on the podcast.
It's my pleasure, and I'm grateful that you would invite me.
So Gil, you have such a great background. Can you just give us a bit about your background and your journey?
Sure. So I'm a physician by training. I trained in internal medicine, worked for a short while in patient care, and then I had the opportunity to go into the pharmaceutical side of the world. So 30 plus years ago, I joined Glaxo and had really a wonderful experience at Glaxo over about an 12 year period. Wonderful in this way. I had a mentor there that really allowed me to be exposed to a number of different areas of a pharmaceutical company. So I was exposed to manufacturing. I was able to work in our manufacturing plant for a while. And oh, by the way, that was the years where Zantac was the most popular drug ever prescribed. And so manufacturing played a key role in that the demand was high. And if we stubbed our toe in manufacturing, it had really an enormous impact on the company. So manufacturing is very important. And that was an experience that not many physicians to this day have ever had. So that was good. I ended up in infectious disease and working with drugs to get the labels expanded in infectious disease. Ultimately, I left Glaxo to join a contract research organization. And the reason I did that was this same mentor told me that if I wanted my career to continue to move up the ladder, I needed to have some exposure into the public markets. So I joined a CRO as an EVP and was able to get on the conference calls and talk about earnings and forecasts and why somebody should invest with us, etc. So that was another learning experience. But just, you know, your mother or your father at some point in time probably told you, don't burn bridges.
Yeah.
Well, I was very lucky. When I left Glaxo, I didn't burn any bridges. I went into the CRO world for almost 6 years. But then somebody that I had worked with at Glaxo called and invited me to come to a small company in Maryland named MedImmune. That company went on to be bought out by AstraZeneca for $15 billion. While I was at MedImmune, the stock went up 4,000%. So I was blessed to be there during about a 6 year period. What that also did then, that allowed me to have what I describe as an upregulation in my entrepreneurial gene. And so I left after having that windfall and started my own company. We licensed some technology from the University of Chicago. We raised some money, did some work, and 26 months later, we sold it for a very nice profit to a public company on the West Coast. After that, then I started three service-based companies. One was an institutional review board. We were IHARP accredited and did some nice work there, including global approval of approval of global studies. We were actually consulted by the World Health Organization for review of studies that were going to be done in Equatorial Guinea, because at that time, Equatorial Guinea didn't have any review clinical review resources. And so we were able to help with that. Second to that, I started an institutional biosafety company. So if you're familiar, IRBs or institutional review boards are concerned about the well-being of the human patient in a clinical trial. IBC or institutional biosafety companies are concerned with the well-being of the healthcare worker in the environment. So we started that company. And then the third service company We were a small group. We had 10 physicians and 10 nurses, and we worked again in the human clinical trial space monitoring studies there. I sold all of those companies to private equity firms a few years ago. And since then, I've taken on some other interests. I'm the co-founder of an artificial intelligence company. We are involved in chronic care management. The name of that company is Cohort Intelligence. That company is doing very nicely. And then I continue to keep my foot, my toes in the water of human clinical trials. I'm involved with a Parkinson's disease study now, involved with a company in Melbourne, Australia, that's developing a drug for muscular dystrophy. And then another company in Seattle, Washington, that we're developing a product for a rare dermatologic cancer. So, you know, life is full.
Yes, very, very cool. Can you give us a little bit more background on the artificial intelligence company, the Cohort Intelligence? That sounds very interesting.
Sure. So, you know, I'm in that age where we didn't know much about computers, but just in terms of, you know, trying to put the correct team members together, there was a group that out of MIT's artificial intelligence department, and they had an idea for how with NLP, how you could read both structured and unstructured text. So this was a pretty interesting area that not many other people had or were able to conquer, that unstructured, being able to read unstructured text. They were able to do it. Now they wanted to think about, how do we apply that? Where can we use that? And so they came to me to think about how it might work in healthcare. And so what we've done, we've picked out now this area of chronic care and how we can apply it to individuals, for example, with diabetes or any chronic condition that you might think of. I just use diabetes to sort of illustrate what we do. So let's say you're discharged from the hospital and you're diabetic, you're discharged. What we're able to do now is to follow up with you to say, do you have your prescriptions? Do you have your next appointment? Do you have transportation to your next appointment? We're able to take a look at your diet. We're able to take a look at your progress. And we've been able to create a metric for that to say, if you're in our program, you are less likely to be rehospitalized than if you were not in our program. And so that has resonated with a variety of different people, hospital systems to date, but we view it as having opportunity with payers and with other sources as well. So that's the AI piece of that.
So out of all the items that you have, you're doing now, do you have a favorite, or is that like 15 of your best, your favorite child?
Yeah, not really. I mean, you know, I am blessed in this way. I truly am a person that wakes up eager to get the day started. I enjoy the AI component and working with young, very bright programmers to think about how we make other people's lives better. I have been associated with the muscular dystrophy world for a number of years, going on a full decade now. And so working with the company in Melbourne to think about our next steps, what our next human trial is going to be, and how we're going to develop those endpoints, I've truly enjoyed that. In fact, we just had a rare disease conference with the MDM group 2 days ago. So I just enjoy that community. They're good people trying to think about how they can keep their sons alive, and not just keep them alive, but keep them alive with a quality of life that they deserve. So that's been good. And now, you know, just looking at this rare disease for dermatologic cancer, it's a particular type of cancer that is very rare, in the hundreds of cases. So that falls way below, you may not be aware, but the descriptor of rare or very rare has to do with the number of patients per 200,000. Mm-hmm. And so in this case, there'd be fewer than 100 patients per 200,000 people. So it's a very rare disease, but it's absolutely lethal. And so what we're working on there is a DNA repair mechanism. What we believe is that individuals with this disease, and you may or may not be aware of this, but your DNA has an ability to repair itself. Sometimes it's able to do that, and sometimes it's not. In this example, it's not able to repair itself. And we believe that we've put together a group of lysosomes that can do that. Now, you know, again, think about those next steps, manufacturing, and what, you know, animal data. You know, we go into worms first and then rodents and then, you know, other species to think about that. And then how do we do that and then build that ultimately into a human clinical trial? So that's kind of exciting for me. Everybody might not think about working with worms would be exciting, but it's all kind of exciting to me.
Yeah. So what do you think, going back to, you know, you mentioned this mentor that was a guide for you kind of throughout your going to GlaxoSmithKline and then moving eventually to MedImmune. Did this mentor help influence you throughout all of these different opportunities or?
Yeah, so what he really did, he was very kind to put me into positions to build skill sets that I didn't have. And he was very clever to think about what are the skill sets that you need to be successful, not just successful in business, but successful in life. And so I was really blessed in that way. He did a couple things. I can tell you this story because I won't mention any names, but Glaxo hired a physician from Georgetown. And this physician was very well published, and he would have been at FDA and on FDA panels, et cetera. And so Glaxo actually paid him a suitcase full of money to leave Georgetown and come to Raleigh and take over as a vice president of a particular group. Mm-hmm. Well, the end of the story is this. 6 months after he was there, there was a revolt. There was an insurrection. They were, you know, his group was all, and these are PhDs and PharmDs and very educated individuals. He was a terrible manager, terrible. And so they got together, there were a group of physicians at Glaxo at that time. But my guy came to me and he said, Gil, he said, we were so burnt here, because then they had to pay him another suitcase full of money to get him to resign and go back. That's right. That's exactly right. So my fella came to me and he said, look, he said, there are a couple of things that we would like you to do. We think that you're promotable, but here are things that we would like you to do. We would like you, and we'll pay for them. They sent me to to take a management 101 class. But the thing that ultimately that they did that I would guess no other physician in the country has ever done before, they put me into Cleveland, Ohio as a district sales manager for 6 weeks. Ooh. So what you had to do, you parachuted in to the current district manager's office. He took an afternoon to say, here, this is where the files are. This is where everything is. But then you had to think about, I had 14 type A salespeople. Mm-hmm. And so you had to think about how do I manage this group? How do I write objectives and expectations? How do I measure those objectives and expectations? Because they're going to have, you know, they're going to have performance reviews and their bonuses are going to depend on those reviews. So how do you do those things? How do you do territory management? How do you forecast for growth? Except, and so those were just a set of experiences. Again, I'll go back, that I didn't have. He saw that I didn't have that, but he put me in a position to learn those things. And so, I think about him fondly often.
Well, what kinds of life lessons that would they come from this mentor?
Yeah, he was pretty good, like your mother might have been, to say, don't burn bridges.
Yeah.
You know, he was adamant about that. One or two of the other things that he taught me is behave. When you don't think anybody's watching, that's how you want to behave. You know, behave the same way all the time. And that lesson has stood me well. You know, you never know when somebody's going to be watching. So watch your business behaviors.
Interesting. Okay. Well, so if we just shift gears for a second, you know,
sure.
Since this, we've all been through this, I'd love to hear your opinion about how coronavirus has impacted investing dynamics. Do you think that it has? So given you're into all these startups, what do you think?
Yeah, it's a great question. I actually just finished 2 weeks ago. I was the medical monitor on a COVID study for therapeutic. This was a drug that we put into humans that were hospitalized but not on ventilators. And the primary thing that we were looking for was number of days in the hospital. And what we were hoping to do is to show that our drug compared to placebo got you out of the hospital sooner. We're working to clean that data, and we'll have that data analyzed in the coming weeks. But when I think about how COVID maybe has changed things, the biggest thing is this, and I believe it's a positive if we will embrace it. Never before has a vaccine or a drug been developed so quickly as we were able to do under Operation Warp Speed. What I'm about to say is not a political endorsement. Trust me, it's not. But I'm telling you what Trump was able to do with his Operation Warp Speed. And I don't know how involved he was with it other than to say, it's mine, I endorse it, and we're going to run with it. What he was able to do there, I am hopeful that that will change the course of how we develop all drugs moving forward, whatever they are for. This was just unprecedented. And now we see we've got three vaccines that are highly effective, that are available, and we're vaccinating the country. And yeah, there are some hiccups, but we've never done this before. We've really never done it. So we bumped into a few things, but from my perspective, those issues are being managed. And I give the Biden administration credit for that, what they're doing, how they're trying to manage their way through some of the bumps that we ran into. So what I'm hopeful of, what you just see now, you see J&J partnering with Merck. They're historically their, you know, competitor.
Yeah.
And now you're seeing them working together to benefit society and to benefit drug development in a way. I'm really encouraged by that. So while COVID was awful, and I hope that we never have to live through anything like that again, the bright spot for me, especially thinking about investment, is how we know now that we should be working together to find the best solutions the quickest. And so if you're a startup company, I think you have opportunities now to reach out and work with others in a way that can be accretive.
So do you see any other silver linings as a result of the pandemic?
Well, I do. The other silver line. So that's the number one thing, how we work together and how we can work together and do things in an opportunistic way. Mm-hmm. But the other thing is just our understanding of biology. Mm-hmm. So our understanding of immunology jumped light years as HIV came along. I can tell you this, when I was in medical school, I had one class on immunology, one. And so we didn't talk about T cells and B cells and, you know, and memory cells. You know, it was just something that wasn't, it really didn't have much of a place. All of a sudden, HIV comes along and we take that and we say, okay, here, this is a dreadful disease killing hundreds and hundreds of our people. And here are the reason why: T cell depletion. And so we start to learn about that. And now, as you, I'm sure, appreciate, people live full lives with HIV. I think what's going to happen here, we're just continuing to learn a great deal about COVID and the impacts of COVID. You know, we're starting to talk about these mysterious inflammatory syndromes that occur post-COVID infection. We're learning about those things. And those experience, that learning will translate into other diseases moving forward. So that's another silver lining. We're improving our knowledge delta. That's getting better. And that can only be a good thing for humankind.
Can you talk a little bit more about the mysterious inflammatory infections?
Sure. So it's mysterious inflammatory syndrome. And here's what we're seeing. Not with everyone, but with a significant portion of patients that have been infected with COVID, what we're seeing is tremendous fibrotic change to their lungs, fibrotic change in their hearts, and changes to their mental status. I'll give you one or two little statistics. There was in the Journal of Cardiology, European Cardiology, they took a look at 1,200 people that had been infected by COVID. And in that 1,200, one of the variables that they pulled out were you had no previous cardiac history. In other words, you've had normal EKGs throughout your medical record. Mm-hmm. In this study of 1,200 people, 57% had EKG changes post-COVID infection. Now, that doesn't mean that now all of a sudden that you've got cardiac disease in the way that you're going to die in the next month. I don't want to be overly dramatic, but you had some change that was picked up on an EKG that wasn't there pre-infection. Mm-hmm. So so the mysterious part about it has really been in children, because they're taking a look at children now that are coming down and have these sort of inflammatory type reactions, and they're saying, gee, where did this come from? How did this virus create this biologic setting to cause these fibrotic changes? Ooh. So we're learning.
And very interesting. Very, very interesting. Yeah. Well, I think, you know, for the silver lining that I can think of, beyond what you've talked about, the radical collaboration that's occurred, which is amazing, is actually we can all do things remotely, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, so many trips that I've taken up throughout my lifetime and flying all over the world, and it's nice not to have to travel as much, I think.
I couldn't agree more. In fact, in my world, and some of your viewers may not be aware of this, but in my world of writing these protocols and trying to implement these protocols, what we do is we find physician investigators domestically and globally, mm-hmm. To enroll their patients into these protocols. Well, one of the things that I've done throughout my career, I would fly to a site, I would fly to California, I would fly to Europe, I'd fly to India, wherever these studies were being implemented, and I would be there to see that they were implemented correctly, so that the right patients were in there, the right data was being collected, et cetera. I get on a plane, I'm a million mile flyer for Delta. And almost so with American and Southwest.
Yep.
But not anymore. Not anymore. Don't have to do it. And so we get on Zoom calls like this, and we have good discussions. And it's not to say that I won't get on a plane sometime down the road as the dust continues to settle. But I certainly won't be on a plane the way that I have historically been.
Yeah. I'm the same as you, Gil. I have a million miles with all of them. but it's
right.
Nice to be able to not have to travel as much. So, you know, if you reflect on all of the different activities you've done throughout your life, what do you think the biggest successes and failures have been?
So the biggest success was becoming an entrepreneur and owning my own companies and having responsibility for my own companies. It's not to say that that isn't stressful. In fact, I found it to be very stressful to be sitting on a Friday afternoon and thinking about payroll. You know, that's if you create the monster, you have to feed the monster.
Yes, that's right.
And so that was that was something that that you had to learn to deal with. But the freedom that you have when you're the boss, when you're the founder, and the joy that I experienced from being able to start something and see it through and see it successful, I would say that was one of the great successes that I enjoyed a little later on in my life. I had started, I was a physician and then a corporate guy. But really when I became an entrepreneur and started my own companies, I look back on that with great fondness. And as the failures, knock on wood,
I've had a few.
not a lot, but one of the things that I've tried to do for others is be a similar kind of mentor for others, the way that I found a mentor for me. And I would say that it's worked out well most of the time, but there are some times where people just fundamentally want to go down a different path. So I don't look back on those as failures necessarily, but as maybe lost opportunities. Mm-hmm. So that's life, right? You have some highs and some lows. And mm-hmm. For me, those have been the two things that I think represent that.
Yeah, and Gil, you've been a great member of the board of directors for the Center for Advancing Innovation, and a mentor, I would say, for all of the people in the Center for Advancing Innovation. So thank you for that.
You're kind. Thank you. Thank you for giving me the opportunity.
Oh, that's great. That's great. So what advice would you give entrepreneurs, given your experiences, what would be the nuggets that you already mentioned a few? Don't burn bridges. Find and develop mentor relationships, I think, is another big one. Behave when you don't think anyone's watching. And, collaborate. The point that you made on the silver lining, seek out collaborations. Are there any other?
Yeah, and this maybe is the biggest one, Rosemary, and it's fear. Don't allow fear to keep you from doing something. That's maybe the one that I bump into the most often. And it's legitimate. Fear is a good thing. It's not a bad thing. Fear causes you to think your way through. So I don't want to label it as if you are fearful, that's bad. That's not bad. But you can't allow fear to hold you back. Don't allow fear. You say, gee, I want to start this hot dog company next week. Well, you don't want fear to hold you back so that, I'm not going to do it next week. I'll do it next year. Mm-hmm. That, in my view, is a big deal that I see a lot of people struggling with, is just fear that holds them back. And so I would just encourage your listeners, if they're thinking about becoming an entrepreneur and starting their own business, whatever that is, a biotech business, an artificial intelligence business, or a hot dog stand, whatever that is, don't allow fear to move your timelines out unnecessarily.
Yeah, so how do you think, how do you advise people to deal with their fear?
Yeah, so one is, I just asked them, is your fear rational or irrational? Is it fear that is from your childlike mind or from your adult mind? So if you say, for example, I have a mortgage, I have a car payment, I have twins on the way, well, that's real fear. I mean, those are real things, real responsibilities that you have, and you need to think your way through. Do I have 6 months of savings that can get me through, without having a negative experience, losing my car, losing my house, having my twins hit me? That's a real fear. Mm-hmm. The irrational fear is thinking, I can never be successful at this. I've never done this before. I'm just not going to be able to make it. That's irrational fear. You can make it. Think your way through, What are the opportunities? Where are the opportunities? What are the costs? And how do you get to the goal line? You can think your way through that. So don't allow irrational fears to hold you back. Be respectful of rational fears, but don't allow irrational fears to hold you back.
So what if, Dale, someone, they jump into entrepreneurship, they're afraid, but they figure out a way, a plan, they have a plan, but now they're not getting traction. So how do you advise people to pivot?
That's really a profound question, because it happens.
Yeah.
You have a good plan. You've thought of a good plan. You have good people. You're surrounded by good people. And all of a sudden, you just don't get the traction. I'm actually involved as a board member with a company right now that they have a way of stopping hemorrhage bleeding. And it's really set up for the warrior, the warfighter in the field. But it has many other applications to stop bleeding. They've got good people, orthopedic surgeons, trauma surgeons. Mm-hmm. We've done some good work, but we're just not getting traction. Mm-hmm. So the question is, but we step back. I'm so impressed by our CEO. He brought this to us and he just said, we're not getting traction. We have to think about why. So he brought everybody together and we had a frank discussion on our slide deck, on our pitch, on your evaluation, on our science. And so we really did a hard look at all of those things. At the end of all that, we said there's some things that need to change. And we made those changes and now we're starting to get some traction. So I think one of the things that I would say is don't give up too soon, but be reflective of where you are and what you're doing. And then once you've done that, the other thing that I would recommend is that once you've done that, you've had that introspective moment, you say, okay, now I've got to have a timeline. How long am I going to give this in this new view to be successful or to try to gain some traction? Mm-hmm. Because it probably isn't a smart thing to fight a losing fight over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of reasons for that. But I would say those two things, be introspective, get your team together, take a look at what you're doing, your message, your science, et cetera. Review it, be critical of it, bring in fresh eyes to be critical of it. And then once you've made or pivoted and made the changes that you think are merited, then give yourself a time frame to say, okay, this is our time frame till we're going to unwind what we have.
So I think a lot of the times what we've seen throughout these companies we've created, we've created 335 companies in the last 6 years. And right. What's really interesting is the common thread about the traction issue. A lot of times it has to be has to do with disagreeable people. Or the team just continues to fall apart.
Yeah.
They lose a member of the team. So the team creation and sticking together as a team is challenging.
Yeah. It is.
What have you seen to try to avoid mistakes with the team?
Yeah. Again, a very good question. And, you've seen it. By the way, Rosie, nobody has created more wealth and entrepreneurialism than you have. And you deserve a lot of credit for that. But I know because of all that you've done and then just the sheer numbers, you're the right person to highlight this and to say, how's this work? We've seen this happen. So I think there are a couple of things. So you have this team, you have to try to understand what motivates them. Is it the idea that they're getting out of bed in the morning and working on a particular science or problem that they have a passion for? What's the thing that may cause them to not be the special team member that you know that they can be? And so I think that's the first thing you do. what motivates them, what's their passion, and then you drive towards that. And that has a tendency, I believe, at least that's what my experience has been, that will have the tendency to keep them challenged and on board and committed. Team members have some things though too. You know, they have that car payment, insurance payment, house payment. And so sometimes they bump into just the harsh realities of their own responsibility that, hey, look, this big IBM over here is going to pay me double what you're paying me. I have to leave. I have a house payment. And so you run into some of that. Again, the thing that I think that it has happened to me is when I tell that person that I'm grateful for the contribution that they've made, they go to IBM, just using that as an example. And now somebody at IBM says, gee, I've been at IBM for 25 years. I'd like to get out and be a part of a startup, something fresh. That person makes that connection and sends this very experienced person from IBM to you. And now all of a sudden it's a win-win. So I think that, you know, managing teams, there are books written about managing teams. I think you as the leader have to have a vision for what the team is, and you have to have a vision for each individual, what motivates each individual to keep them together.
Is there anything else you'd like to tell the entrepreneurs that are listening today?
Yeah, you know, the thing that was maybe the most eye-opening to me, and I don't know why, I was just naive to this, but cash is king. If you're starting up and you're trying, you need cash to get started. In other words, you can't self-fund. Mm-hmm. The person that has cash that's going to take out their checkbook and write you a check, that person has enormous power. And so don't be shocked by that. I personally, with my first company, I had to have cash. I had to have cash to go to the University of Chicago and buy the technology. So when I went out and raised this money, you know, the people that had the cash could demand the terms that they wanted. They didn't have to stick to my terms. They had the cash, they had the ability, and they were, you know, eager to come on board, but they wanted to have their investment under their terms, which I had to agree to because my passion was to take the technology and develop it. It all worked out. We were able to have a transaction 26 months later where everybody did well, including myself. But boy, that first time was sort of eye-opening to appreciate how powerful individuals with cash can be.
So this is a $1,000 question, pun intended.
Yeah.
So a lot, this is something that people struggle with. We did a study for the Kauffman Foundation on why do startups fail? Yeah. And we also did a survey in Maryland, Virginia, and DC to ask entrepreneurs, you know, what are their biggest problems, you know, challenges in being an entrepreneur in this area. And yeah. Their number one issue was, well, we raising capital, of course.
Yeah.
What I found with the Kauffman Foundation report that I mentioned on why do startups fail, we found that there are 20 capabilities that are required for teams to have or have access to, like for example, advisors that have those capabilities in order for them to be successful. So the team really, to me, is the core, it's the most important thing in order to get the cash, you know?
Right.
Yeah. So I think—
if you think about it,
yeah.
You know, if you think about it, let's just say, I'm going to come to you and I'm going to say, Rosemary, I want you to take your checkbook out and write me a check for $100,000.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing that you're going to say back to me is that, okay, how are you going to deploy that $100,000?
Yep.
Is it just you? Or do you have a medicinal chemist? Do you have a project manager? Do you have a patented product? You know, you're going to ask a lot of those questions. And so, yeah, I can appreciate that, you know, raising capital is one thing, but to your point, you know, that core team is very important. You got to have the core team together before you can go raise the money.
That's right. That's right. So I want to thank you, Gil, so much for your time and your valuable insights today. And by the way, speaking of cash, yeah. If there's any entrepreneurs out there who want to raise up to $5 million, you can maybe be floated on Ignite Social Impact. It's ignitesocialimpact.com. It's a new crowd equity platform for social impact companies and tech for good companies. So I have to do a little plug for that. There's a lot of companies who want to raise some cash, and there's a lot of people who want to deploy cash. So we have a whole platform for that, ignitesocialimpact.com. So just to summarize some of the key takeaways from Gil. One, don't allow fear to keep you from doing something. Don't burn bridges. Get great mentors to guide you through to continue to build your skill sets. And I can tell you from my perspective in my career, that has been key. I mean, I have part of the reasons I would move around is because I felt stagnant. I mean, I needed to grow. I needed to build more skill sets. I always strived for what could I do next? Really fortunate to find a mentor. I mean, I was going to ask you that, you know, how did you actually find that mentor? Behave when you don't think anyone's watching. Collaborate from a team perspective, find out what motivates people. Be introspective if you have to solve a problem. And be critical as well. So when you create your new plan, have a timeline for it. And remember, cash is king. It has enormous power. So I don't know if there's anything else you wanted to add, Gil, but this was a fantastic discussion.
Well, I'm grateful that you invited me, and I hope that some of your listeners will be able to pull out maybe one or two pearls that will help them succeed.
Absolutely. Thank you, Gil. Mm-hmm.